They are made of Hytheline, said the elf. But there is no time now to instruct you in the art of their making. Had we known that this craft delighted you, we could have taught you much. But now, alas, unless you should at some time hither return, you must be content with our gift. May it serve you well. Come, said Haldir. All is now ready for you. Enter the boats, but take care at first. Heed the words, said the other elves. These boats are light built, and they are crafty, and unlike the boats of other folk, they will not sink. Lade them as you will, but they are wayward if mishandled. It would be wise if you accustom yourselves to stepping in and out, here where there is a landing place, before you set off downstream. The company was arranged in this way. Aragorn, Frodo, and Sam were in one boat, Boromir, Merry, and Pippin in another, and in the third were Legolas and Gimli, who had now become fast friends. In this last boat most of the goods and packs were stowed. The boats were moved and steered with short-handled paddles that had broad leaf-shaped blades. When all was ready, Aragorn led them on a trial up the Silver Lode. The current was swift, and they went forward slowly. Sam sat in the bows, clutching the sides, and looking back wistfully to the shore. The sunlight glittering on the water dazzled his eyes. As they passed beyond the green field of the Tongue, the trees drew down to the river's bank. Here and there golden leaves tossed and floated on the rippling stream. The air was very bright and still, and there was a silence, except for the high, distant song of larks. They turned a sharp bend in the river, and there, sailing proudly down the stream toward them, they saw a swan of great size. The water rippled on either side of the white breast beneath its curving neck. Its beak shone like burnished gold, and its eyes glinted like jet set in yellow stones. Its huge white wings were half lifted. A music came down the river as it drew nearer, and suddenly they perceived that it was a ship, wrought and carved with elven skill in the likeness of a bird. Two elves clad in white steered it with black paddles. In the midst of the vessel sat Celeborn, and behind him stood Galadriel, tall and white. A circlet of golden flowers was in her hair, and in her hand she held a harp, and she sang. Sad and sweet was the sound of her voice in the cool, clear air.
I sang of leaves of gold, and leaves of gold there grew. Of wind I sang, a wind there came, and in the branches blew. Beyond the sun, beyond the moon, the foam was on the sea, and by the strand of Ilmarin there grew a golden tree. Beneath the stars of ever-eve, in Eldamar it shone, in Eldamar, beside the walls of Elven Tirion. There long the golden leaves have grown upon the branching years, while here beyond the sundering seas now fall the elven tears. O Lorien, the winter comes, the barren leafless day. The leaves are falling in the stream, the river flows away. O Lorien, too long I have dwelt upon this hither shore, and in a fading crown have twined the golden Elanor. But if of ships I now should sing, what ship would come to me? What ship would bear me ever back across so wide a sea?
Aragorn stayed his boat as the swan ship drew alongside. The lady ended her song and greeted them. "We have come to bid you our last farewell," she said, "and to speed you with blessings from our land." "Though you have been our guests," said Celeborn, "you have not yet eaten with us, and we bid you, therefore, to a parting feast here between the flowing waters that will bear you far from Lorien." The swan passed on slowly to the Hythe, and they turned their boats and followed it. There in the last end of Eglardil, upon the green grass, the parting feast was held. But Frodo ate and drank little, heeding only the beauty of the lady and her voice. She seemed no longer perilous or terrible, nor filled with hidden power. Already she seemed to him, as by men of later days elves still at times are seen, present and yet remote, a living vision of that which has already been left far behind by the flowing streams of time. After they had eaten and drunk, sitting upon the grass, Celeborn spoke to them again of their journey, and lifting his hand he pointed south to the woods beyond the Tongue. "As you go down the water," he said, "you will find that the trees will fail, and you will come to a barren country. There the river flows in stony vale amid high moors, until at last, after many leagues, it comes to the tall island of the Tindrock, and that we call Tall Brandir. There it casts its arms about the steep shores of the isle, and falls then with a great noise and smoke over the cataracts of Rauros, down into the Neandalf, the Wetwang, as it is called in your tongue. That is a wide region of sluggish fen, where the stream becomes tortuous and much divided. There the Entwash flows in by many mouths from the forest of Fangorn in the west. About that stream, on this side of the great river, lies Rohan. On the further side are the bleak hills of the Emyn Muil. The wind blows from the east there, for they look out over the dead marshes and the no-man lands to Kirith Gorgor and the black gates of Mordor. Boromir, and any that go with him seeking Minas Tirith, will do well to leave the great river above Rauros and cross the Entwash before it finds the marshes. Yet they should not go too far up that stream, nor risk becoming entangled in the forest of Fangorn. That is a strange land, and is now little known. But Boromir and Aragorn doubtless do not need this warning."
"Indeed, we have heard of Fangorn in Minas Tirith," said Boromir. "But what I have heard seems to me for the most part old wives' tales, such as we tell to our children. All that lies north of Rohan is now to us so far away that fancy can wander freely there. Of old Fangorn lay upon the borders of our realm, but it is now many lives of men since any of us visited it, to prove or disprove the legends that have come down from distant years. I have myself been at whiles in Rohan, but I have never crossed it northwards. When I was sent out as a messenger, I passed through the gap by the skirts of the White Mountains, and crossed the Isen and the Grey Flood into Northerland. A long and wearisome journey. 400 leagues, I reckon it, and it took me many months, for I lost my horse at Tharbad, at the fording of the Grey Flood. After that journey, and the road I have trodden with this company, I do not much doubt that I shall find a way through Rohan, and Fangorn too, if need be."
"Then I need say no more," said Celeborn, "but do not despise the law that has come down from distant years. For oft it may chance that old wives keep in memory word of things that once were needful for the wise to know." Now Galadriel rose from the grass, and taking a cup from one of her maidens, she filled it with white mead and gave it to Celeborn. "Now it is time to drink the cup of farewell," she said. "Drink, Lord of the Galathrim, and let not your heart be sad, though night must follow noon, and already our evening draweth nigh." Then she brought the cup to each of the company, and bade them drink and farewell. But when they had drunk, she commanded them to sit again on the grass, and chairs were set for her and for Celeborn. Her maidens stood silent about her, and a while she looked upon her guests. At last she spoke again. "We have drunk the cup of parting," she said, "and the shadows fall between us. But before you go, I have brought in my ship gifts, which the Lord and Lady of the Galathrim now offer you in memory of Lothlorien. Then she called to each in turn. Here is the gift of Celeborn and Galadriel to the leader of your company, she said to Aragorn, and she gave him a sheath that had been made to fit his sword. It was overlaid with a tracery of flowers and leaves wrought of silver and gold, and on it were set in elven runes formed of many gems the name Andúril and the lineage of the sword. The blade that is drawn from this sheath shall not be stained or broken even in defeat, she said. But is there aught else that you desire of me at our parting? For darkness will flow between us, and it may be that we shall not meet again, unless it be far hence upon a road that has no returning. And Aragorn answered, Lady, you know of all my desire, and long held in keeping the only treasure that I seek. Yet it is not yours to give me, even if you would, and only through darkness shall I come to it. Yet maybe this will lighten your heart, said Galadriel, for it was left in my care to be given to you should you pass through this land. Then she lifted from her lap a great stone of a clear green, set in a silver brooch that was wrought in the likeness of an eagle with outspread wings. And as she held it up, the gem flashed like the sun shining through the leaves of spring. This stone I gave to Celebrion, my daughter, and she to hers. And now it comes to you as a token of hope. In this hour, take the name that was foretold for you, Elessar, the elf stone of the house of Elendil. Then Aragorn took the stone and pinned the brooch upon his breast, and those who saw him wondered, for they had not marked before how tall and kingly he stood, and it seemed to them that many years of toil had fallen from his shoulders.
For the gifts that you have given me, I thank you, he said. O Lady of Lorien, of whom were sprung Celebrion and Arwen Evenstar, what praise could I say more?
The lady bowed her head, and she turned then to Boromir, and to him she gave a belt of gold. And to Merry and Pippin she gave small silver belts, each with a clasp wrought like a golden flower. To Legolas she gave a bow, such as the Galathrim used, longer and stouter than the bows of Mirkwood, and strung with a string of elf hair. With it went a quiver of arrows. For you, little gardener and lover of trees, she said to Sam, I have only a small gift. She put into his hand a little box of plain grey wood, unadorned save for a single silver rune upon the lid. Here is set G for Galadriel, she said, but also it may stand for garden in your tongue. In this box there is earth from my orchard, and such blessing as Galadriel has still to bestow is upon it. It will not keep you on your road, nor defend you against any peril, but if you keep it and see your home again at last, then perhaps it may reward you. Though you should find all barren and laid waste, there will be few gardens in Middle-earth that will bloom like your garden if you sprinkle this earth there. Then you may remember Galadriel and catch a glimpse far off of Lorien that you have seen only in our winter. For our spring and our summer are gone by, and they will never be seen on earth again, save in memory. Sam went red to the ears and muttered something inaudible, as he clutched the box and bowed as well as he could.
And what gift would a dwarf ask of the elves? Said Galadriel, turning to Gimli. None, lady, answered Gimli. It is enough for me to have seen the Lady of the Galathrim and to have heard her gentle words.
Hear, all ye elves, she cried to those about her. Let none say again that dwarves are grasping and ungracious. Yet surely, Gimli, son of Gloin, you desire something that I could give. Name it, I bid you. You shall not be the only guest without a gift.
There is nothing, Lady Galadriel, said Gimli, bowing low and stammering. Nothing unless it might be, unless it is permitted to ask. Nay, to name a single strand of your hair, which surpasses the gold of the earth as the stars surpass the gems of the mine. I do not ask for such a gift, but you commanded me to name my desire."
The elves stirred and murmured with astonishment, and Celeborn gazed at the dwarf in wonder, but the lady smiled. "It is said that the skill of the dwarves is in their hands rather than in their tongues," she said. "Yet that is not true of Gimli, for none have ever made to me a request so bold and yet so courteous. And how shall I refuse, since I commanded him to speak? But tell me, what would you do with such a gift?"
"Treasure it, lady," he answered, "in memory of your words to me at our first meeting. And if ever I return to the smithies of my home, it shall be set in imperishable crystal to be an heirloom of my house and a pledge of goodwill between the mountain and the wood until the end of days."
Then the lady unbraided one of her long tresses and cut off 3 golden hairs and laid them in Gimli's hand. "These words shall go with the gift," she said. "I do not foretell, for all foretelling is now vain. On the one hand lies darkness, on the other only hope. But if hope should not fail, then I say to you, Gimli, son of Gloin, that your hands shall flow with gold, and yet over you gold shall have no dominion." "And you, ring-bearer," she said, turning to Frodo, "I come to you last, who are not last in my thoughts. For you I have prepared this." She held up a small crystal phial. It glittered as she moved it, and rays of white light sprang from her hand. "In this phial," she said, "is caught the light of Iarendil's star, set amid the waters of my fountain. It will shine brighter when night is about you. May it be a light to you in dark places, when all other lights go out. Remember Galadriel and her mirror." Frodo took the phial, and for a moment as it shone between them, he saw her again, standing like a queen, great and beautiful, but no longer terrible. He bowed, but found no words to say. Now the lady arose, and Celeborn led them back to the hythe. A yellow noon lay on the green land of the tongue, and the water glittered with silver. All at last was made ready. The company took their places in the boats as before. Crying farewell, the elves of Lórien, with long grey poles, thrust them out into the flowing stream, and the rippling waters bore them slowly away. The travellers sat still without moving or speaking. On the green bank near to the very point of the tongue, the Lady Galadriel stood alone and silent. As they passed her, they turned, and their eyes watched her slowly floating away from them. For so it seemed to them, Lórien was slipping backward, like a bright ship masted with enchanted trees, sailing on to forgotten shores, while they sat helpless upon the margin of the grey and leafless world. Even as they gazed, the silver load passed out into the currents of the great river, and their boats turned and began to speed southward. Soon the white form of the lady was small and distant. She shone like a window of glass upon a far hill in the westering sun, or as a remote lake seen from a mountain, a crystal fallen in the lap of the land. Then it seemed to Frodo that she lifted her arms in a final farewell, and far but piercing clear on the following wind came the sound of her voice singing. For now she sang in the ancient tongue of the elves beyond the sea, and he did not understand the words. Fair was the music, but it did not comfort him. Yet, as is the way of elvish words, they remained graven in his memory, and long afterwards he interpreted them as well as he could. The language was that of elven song, and spoke of things little known on Middle-earth. "I, Laurie Lantar Lassisurinen, jene unotime verama Allaron, jene velinte Juldar Avanier, me ormarde lisse mirovoreva, andunne pella, vardo telma, nulueni jassen tintilar i eleni.
O Mario Airetare Lirinen. Si mani yul.